Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. I just want to say thank you for tuning in and listening. Hopefully we can present you some good information today and probably also just hopefully entertain you a little bit. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Herer.
Pat Park.
Glenn Fink.
Very good. Now we're gonna hit you want to hit a local issue?
Yes.
How local is local?
Very, very local. We have one of our real strong supporters, but it's Dr. Jay Singleton, who's an optical surgeon.
Full disclosure, right? He is one of our supporters of the show.
Absolutely, and a great supporter. Anyway, he has been fighting this requirement called Certificate of Need, which is a state requirement that essentially anyone who starts a private practice or medical practice, they have to get a, quote, certificate of need. They have to get approval that the service that they're going to be adding to the community where they're going to be putting up this practice, that there's actually a certifiable need. And he has been restricted in some of the things he wants to do. And he filed this lawsuit, about 2 years ago?
It's probably longer.
Five or eight.
It's been a while. But anyway, he's trying to free himself up as well as other practitioners. And what they announced earlier this week was that the state treasurer and also the State Employees Association have both come out in support of his lawsuit because it's from what I understand, it's going in front of a 3-judge panel who are supposed to determine whether there's enough evidence to go forward with it or what they're going to do with it. Anyway, it's pending a judicial review. And I think that, and the arguments that the state treasurer made and the state employees was that the certificate of need requirements raises the cost of health care.
Yes.
And it reduces, because instead of having competition at the local level, then you have one or two people who are the big providers. They control it. Is that not what you understand, Mary?
No, it goes deeper than that. Because of the certificate of need, oftentimes off-site surgery sites are not allowed. And the difference between cataract surgery in a hospital and an off-site place can be as much as $8,000. And of course, the health insurance companies pick that up.
The other thing that is up, and again, we have watched this for a number of years. We've gone up to the legislature in the past where, and I'm going to say, when we went to Michael Speciale's office and there were boxes, it was coming up before the legislature. There were boxes and boxes of letters from nurses, doctors, everybody that was in support of keeping the con laws there. These were
to keeping the certificate of need in place?
Yes, because they had been told that if it was taken out, they would lose their jobs, which was not true, but that's what they had been told.
There were just thousands of letters there in support of keeping con in place. The other thing that I know is up, the certificate of need laws apparently conflict with something in the state constitution that says we're allowed to do free enterprise.
Yeah, and competition. I mean, it's restricting competition.
It's creating a monopoly.
Yeah, exactly. Then they also argue that the certificate of need requirement reduces access to medical services in rural areas, indicating that, you have to go to these larger facilities, which makes the local people less access to some service. So hopefully this will help them win this lawsuit. I'd like to see that happen.
Part of it right now that's running through the court system is in Durham, I believe it was. There was a need for additional hospital beds that was awarded to one organization, and the other organization says you have stymied our ability to do free commerce. For that's apparently the way that it's coming up before the courts.
And right again, now. This has been spun by people who make money by this monopoly to be a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. It will end a monopoly and help get our health care costs down.
Yeah, and I suspect also some of those big medical organizations, hospitals and so on, they're probably in a position to contribute to campaigns.
Oh, yeah.
For politicians running for office a lot more so than individual practitioners that are trying to start their own business and compete with them. So I'm sure that weighs into it, too.
Yeah, so if you looked at it, if you tried to put this in with the auto industry itself, I realize we have dealerships, brand name dealerships, that take care of their brand of cars. But you also have the ability to go to a local garage. And guess what? There's one local garage. You go down a couple of blocks, there's another local garage. And then somebody else wants to open up another local garage. There is no real restriction on opening up competitive garages.
Yeah. But they restrict your access to medical care.
Just
you
medical
get your car repaired, you get your body repaired.
That's right.
Your car repair doesn't have the complication of insurance.
Well, that's like when we were living in Massachusetts, we discovered that you could get a vet 24 hours a day. You might not be able to get a doctor 24 hours a day, but if your cat was needed emergency care, you could get it.
Oh, I was thinking Corvette.
We know where your mind is, Pat.
You Yankees are crazy.
So what else we got to talk about?
You want to talk about the government shutdown? We understand they're supposed to vote on it today. Today is Wednesday, I think.
Yeah, they said 5 o'clock, done by 7.
At the House. The Senate has already approved it, right?
And the House is being presented with it.
The House is waiting for the vote tonight.
Hopefully the same bill. Yep.
Yeah.
Before we go there, I have one bit of trivia that I want to bring up that's a little bit disconcerting. Whiteman, I guess it is, Air Force Base in Missouri, shares a fence with a trailer park allegedly linked to the Chinese Communist Party.
They bought the trailer park, is what I read. The Chinese did.
Yeah, the Chinese bought the trailer park.
And that's where our stealth bombers are.
Yes.
Jesus.
And according to this article, which is in evidently from the Daily Caller News Foundation, the former commander of the base was completely unaware of the situation. Now, I'm not putting the responsibility on him, but it seems to me that our Department of Defense ought to be a little bit more aware of who owns the property next to our military bases. And of course, we've seen a move by the Chinese Communists in recent years of buying all kinds of land very near our military bases. And that is true in North Carolina, and that is true in Eastern North Carolina. There is a whole bunch of farmland owned by the Chinese that's very close to Cherry Point. This is not good. We need to wake up and pay attention.
But I think was it the last session of the legislature or the one before that they actually passed a law in North Carolina that restricted the foreign ownership of land within so many miles of military bases. That's that's the correct. I mean, some of those things already exist, so it's going to have to be undone.
Yes.
So hopefully they will go in and force those people out of those facilities, but. You know, it's amazing when these things happen. You look at it and say, don't these people realize who they're dealing with these foreigners, these Chinese coming in? And, you know, it's like the student visas.
Yes.
You know, and this is something, I mean, you know, I am a conservative, and I support the conservative things that Donald Trump does. But the other day he mentioned something. It was an interview with somebody on I think it was on Fox News. They were talking about these student visas. And right now, I think they estimate there's about 250,000 to 300,000 Chinese nationals attending our universities. And Trump made a comment about expanding that, which shocked me because you would think that we'd be trying to get rid of them because they've had issues with them stealing research facts, taking that data and sending it over to the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party in China. And we should be restricting, eliminating these Chinese students. And I was shocked when he said that he would be in favor of expanding it.
Well, China's never been real respectful about copyrights, patents, and intellectual property.
You're being kind. They've been stealing it, not just lack of respect.
I was trying to be tactful.
And that, by the way, law or legislation in North Carolina was proposed by our Senator Bob Brinson.
That's what I thought. I thought it was a locally inspired.
There are other states that have done that too.
In my opinion, we ought to do exactly what China does. You go to China, if you're from another country, you cannot own any land in China. Okay? You come to the United States, we have these countries buying not only the land, but we have them buying, for example, some of the food processing plants, companies. They're owned by China. Smithfield is owned by China.
Yeah, I don't buy their meat anymore.
And you know, what are we doing? They're either adversaries or they're not. And they are adversaries, so we need to clean up this mess. And I was disappointed when Donald Trump said something about allowing the expansion of these Chinese students. And he said something about, they provide a lot of financial support, particularly to some of the universities that have trouble maintaining their student census, and they need more students. And that's not a good reason just because it makes money.
They get charged the full boat. Americans get scholarships, but they get charged the full tuition. And that's it's all about the money.
Yeah,
I hate to say that, but it's all about the money.
And the other thing, too, is you have, let's say, 300,000 Chinese students in our universities. That means there's 300,000 fewer Americans that can attend those universities based on just space, if you look at just numbers. Mm-hmm. So we are forcing some of our students to be unable to attend, and so that we can let the Chinese, and it's other people from other countries too. It's not just the Chinese.
Well, of course, we're going to look at what happens with our guaranteed government loans. That when a student comes out of college, there's no way they can pay back all of those loans. It's crazy. It's crazy. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call Show.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers, and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout Eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Welcome back. Again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Where do we want to go? You want to go to the shutdown first?
Well, yeah, I think, Mary, do you want to bring up where we are?
Well, it is supposed to end very quickly. They're going, theoretically, we're recording this show on Wednesday. What we have been told is at 5 o'clock on Wednesday, they will begin voting on ending it in the House of Representatives, and the vote will be over by 7. Now, theoretically, the bill is the same bill that was passed to the House. If that is true, if they approve it, it goes right to the president and he signs it.
I don't think that can be the case because the one that was originally done ended the end of this month. So yeah, it's got to be different.
It's the one the Senate passed. They have to approve the Senate's version.
Right. Yeah, and the Senate's version changed the date.
And I think they added, there was some discussion about these senators that were
illegally surveilled.
Illegally surveilled. There was some means for them to fight lawsuits,
right,
which was big money, seemed a little out of place.
And I think there was some funding that they were going to guarantee in past January.
Continued SNAP
through
next
October.
September.
Yeah.
And they did something with veterans.
So it's not exactly, there's some stuff that...
But they didn't change it significantly, and the House is supposed to vote on it. If the House passes it, it goes to President Trump for a signature, and I see no reason that he wouldn't jump on the chance to sign that. It's been such a mess.
Well, you know, it's interesting how the Democrats finally came around to being able to come up with eight Democrats. Democrats didn't push it, but eight Democrats that have agreed in the Senate to end the filibuster, which is basically what we're talking about. It's a filibuster rule, having 60. But all those eight people, I think two of them are already saying they're going to retire.
Right.
And I think the other six are not running or can't run, or they're in districts that, in other words, they're protected from any...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Blowback.
The blowback. And then Schumer, he's really getting attacked by his own... party.
Hammered, yes.
Well, the interesting thing about this, the thing that cracks me up, the media spin, a.k.a. Democrat talking points, was that the Republicans caused the shutdown. And yet, when the Democrats finally voted to end the filibuster, the left wing of their party accused them of stopping the shutdown. So right. that makes no sense. And I want to add to what you said, Alan. Tim Kaine has already announced that he will not... Oh, he doesn't have to run until 2030.
Right. That's
Gene Shaheen of New Hampshire has already stated that she will not be seeking re-election. Maggie Hassan of New Hampshire, she doesn't have to run until 2028. And Jackie Rosen of Nevada does not have to run until 2030.
Yeah.
And Dick Durbin is not running for re-election. So... the theory is the public will forget what they did by the time they have to run again.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, the biggest impact seemed to be on the government programs like the SNAP thing. They were very concerned. I don't think it's been turned off yet, but I think it was coming up to being turned off.
Well,
the funding for it, there were some states that...
Well, they're changing it so the illegals can't collect it.
Well, wait a minute. Let me insert this. The Supreme Court's in the middle of this mess because the question was, we have partial monies to pay partial SNAP.
Right.
And So Trump was ordered to pay all of SNAP. He told the judge, we don't have that money. They told him to use the school lunch program money. So he appealed it. The appeals court stayed with the original court. It went to the Supreme Court. and they stayed that order. So in the meantime, Trump had already paid part of SNAP to the states, and then the Supreme Court stayed it. Now the Supreme Court says they've lengthened the stay. So the government now is in a push-pull situation with the states that got full SNAP or who added funds to the partial they got and paid full SNAP. So naturally, once you know, the government is a huge ship. You can't just turn it on a dime. You can't say one day, pay half, and the next day, pay full, and the next day, oops, no, we meant half. It doesn't work that way. So it's in a mess, as usual.
Yeah, the other big impact was on the apparently the airline flights with the delays, the air traffic controllers, some of them elected to call in sick, and some of them, I think, were taking other jobs. But Trump said he would come out and they would give those traffic controllers who stayed on the job in spite of not getting paid, that he was recommended they get a $10,000 bonus each.
Wow.
For rewarding them for staying on the job, which...
Well, you know, what's interesting about that, the airports that were severely restricting flights, among that list were the two Washington airports. There were also restrictions on private jet travel and landing private jets. So this was the first part of the shutdown that Congress was inconvenienced by. They were looking at not being able to get home for Thanksgiving if they didn't do something. And I think we need to learn our lesson and make sure, if this ever happens again, that the first people to not be paid are Congress, and that they are going to be the ones inconvenienced rather than inconveniencing the American people.
But yeah, that's bigger than, I mean, I don't know if that's constitutional, I thought.
To do what?
That Congress gets paid.
That they get paid?
Yeah.
Because they did get paid.
I know. I'm just saying it's not like in the future we can say they won't just by deciding that.
Well they would have to vote on that.
Yeah, and that's not likely.
So I don't think that's a problem.
That may not happen, yeah. But again, if we had our way as quote, outsiders, not in Congress or else, I think if we came up with this situation again, first off, we would do as North Carolina is doing. You continue to work on your old budget until you come up with a new budget.
Yeah.
That's the way North Carolina is working right now. Now I realize they're doing supplementals right
now.
They
don't have a budget. That's
yeah,
the problem.
So they're working on last year's
budget. They're working on last year's budget, and that's continuing, and they're doing supplementals.
Well, wait a minute. I meant they're voting on a CR because we don't have a budget.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
At the federal level.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if we had a CR or something equivalent that continued on, the first thing that I would do is I would demand that, first off, the legislature and their support staff be unpaid until we get a budget.
Well, they're federal employees, too.
And I would make sure that they all got paid, but I would also make sure the Senate and the House stayed in session 24/7 until they resolved the problem.
Well, you know, the thing about it, too, you know, you think about, well, this is really awful for the federal employees. But in reality of it, for a lot of them, it's a furlough. They don't have to go to work, and they get paid anyway.
They'll get paid somewhere.
Yeah, so the other thing.
They shut down some of the agencies, and it's not like they're losing it. So they stay at home, and then they get the back pay.
The biggest penalty that I see right now is for the average, the average Joe. The average Joe out on the street that hasn't been able to work for 43 days or whatever else, that missed a mortgage payment or something to that effect, some major payment, bang-o, there goes your credit rating. How do you restore your credit rating? Now, I realize I've heard you should have gone to your bank or whoever it is and said, you need to be aware that I cannot pay this because of the federal government situation. But how many people know to do that? Very few.
There's also
very
the fact
few people know how to take care of their own financial affairs.
I agree. Very few people know how to take care of their own finances.
I don't want to get in the middle of this one, but I will mention that we haven't had a correct budget process for the federal government since 2008.
Yeah, but we're in the process. We were in the process until it shuttered to a halt.
Yeah, and they are working. They are working on the 12 department thing,
right,
to get it back to what it should be, which would be very nice.
Well, I just want to insert that on my drive here at the 3 o'clock news, they had Hakeem Jeffries, the dollar store Obama, on the radio saying that he was with all of the House Democrats on the Capitol steps, and he was moaning and complaining that the Senate hadn't passed any of the stuff that they had asked for, and he was kind of inferring that there may be a question whether or not they were going to go in and vote. And so we'll see what happens at 5 o'clock.
Well, yeah, they are doing everything they possibly can, even this, like you said, Pat, a real extreme, like a last-minute gasp, to blame it on the Republicans. That's what they've been trying to do. In reality, the Democrats are the ones that wouldn't sign what they had signed 13 previous times. So they're the ones that caused the shutdown. But they keep saying, well, it's the Republicans because they won't take care of health care. They won't address the health care crisis. Well, the truth of the matter is the supplemental funds that they added to, what was it, Medicaid and
back in COVID time.
Yeah. Was for, and it, when they passed it, it had a limitation that it would end the end of December of this year. So that was built into the legislation. So they're the ones that were changing something that they had actually formulated and passed.
The other part of that,
blame
too.
Blame it on the Republicans.
The money that they're screaming about, the Obama care subsidies, goes to the insurance companies. It doesn't go to the people who are paying the premiums.
I think this is bigger than just the bills that they were talking about. This is to disrupt the things that were going well in the economy.
Mm-hmm.
When you can't get figures on labor, does the Fed make a decision or stop a decision? You know, it's to slow down the economy because things were moving too hard in the correct direction. And this was more about we gotta put a blanket on this economy that's going well and getting better. And it's bigger than just this.
Well, this was COVID too.
Yeah.
They tried to do what they did with COVID.
No, they're striking at the heart of this affordability issue. When the voters were, the exit polls for Mamdani's voters, what's the main issue? And they all said affordability because he had coined that. Well, now they're telling the Republicans are saying we need to concentrate on the economy now. And so this shutdown, like he said, designed to screw with the economy so they can claim that Trump hasn't kept his promises.
And he is. Everything he's done has been favorable to our economy. All his trips overseas, all these tariffs, all these deals, it's all the investments in, I mean, it's all about the economy.
And if inflation is down, earnings
or at least
are
stable.
Up.
It's stable, not down.
Well, we'll never get back to pre-Biden prices.
But it's at 3, it's staying at 3.
Well, I guess the real question is how come prices haven't rolled back?
Because they never
folks,
do.
Guess what, folks, they're not.
They have on gasoline.
Okay. Yeah. Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
What's the largest gun shop in Craven County? If you said E70 Pawn, you are correct. Since Drew got back from the most recent gun show, new guns have been pouring in faster than they can open the boxes. A large showroom at E70 Pawn, slam bam full of firearms, new guns and used guns, long guns and handguns. You will find weapons for self-defense, hunting, target shooting, and collectibles. The team at E70 Pawn is friendly, courteous, and knowledgeable, especially in the area of guns. If E70 Pawn doesn't have the gun you are looking for, they'll try to find it. If you want to do a gun transfer, E70 Pawn will help you do it right. If you are looking to buy, sell, or trade a gun, there's no better place to do it than E70 Pawn. Of course, E70 has tools, electronics, trolling motors, and a great selection of jewelry. But their specialty is guns. And we're talking hundreds of guns. Come see for yourself. E70 Pawn, across from Craven County Fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. We're going to put on a different hat, tariffs.
Do you want to talk about, Pat, about what's going on Supreme Court with tariffs?
Oh, okay. The Supreme Court heard all the oral arguments on tariffs. The questions from the justices sounded skeptical that what Trump is doing under this emergency act is...
Not necessarily an emergency, huh?
Right, not necessarily an emergency. So it's going to turn on that, I think. But with the proviso that it's difficult to predict how the Supreme Court's going to come down just by listening to the questions. But the questions were skeptical. Let's put it that way. They said about 2 weeks for an opinion. So we'll hear.
That's a shorter period than normal, isn't it, to turn something like that around?
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
But aren't tariffs part of foreign policy?
They are. That's what the Supreme Court noted, that on one part, the Constitution says Congress shall lay tariffs. So it's in the congressional authority. And on the other hand, it's a national defense policy. And so where does that balance lie, and how does this emergency act affect that? Does it push it to one side or the other? So that's what they're...
Because it's also, when you think about it, Trump is a negotiator, and the tariffs are starting to bring businesses back to America, which, again, is a national security issue. And they've also... It has changed... I don't know how to say this exactly, but it has changed the way America does business in the world. In other words, we're the big market in the world. We're the consumer-driven economy. And other countries like to get their foot in the door in a country that buys everything and throws it away when it's done. And we are acting like the big kid on the block, which I think is justified.
But that's not necessarily the Supreme Court consideration.
The national security issue is because they give great deference to national security issues.
To the executive branch.
Yeah.
To the executives, yeah.
The executive branch.
But we can't say, oh, well, we're just building another friendship or whatever else. How do you consider that defense?
Some of the tariffs won't be affected because he brought those tariffs in under a different law, Trade Association Act or something. I forget what it was called. Some of the tariffs he brought in under this Emergency Act. Those are the ones that are at issue.
Well, like the monopoly that China has created on rare earth minerals, the deal that was made with Australia about rare earth minerals, that also, I believe, involved tariffs. So you're going to get into a national security issue on that one.
Yeah, and it would really be devastating to the president's ability to make these agreements that protect our country because, like you say, Mayor, these countries were ripping us off. They were putting in these tariffs. They were charging us tariffs, and we were having to pay them, and it was really hurting our national security.
Not to mention, can you imagine Congress trying to lay tariffs?
Imagine trying to get it through the Senate with 60, you need 60 votes. we can't continue the government, then you're going to expect them to be able to be responsive enough that you can actually negotiate with these countries?
It would be devastating.
I wouldn't use the word
responsive. I'd use the word responsible. Yeah. Because right now, and particularly in the Senate, but in Congress too, in the House also, you've got politics over patriotism.
Well, and what's starting to show up now already is China is not following through. They're starting to welch on the rare earth minerals, I heard today. They're not buying the soybeans they'd committed to. They've already are not following through with their part of the deal. So Trump can react to that in a nimble way, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But Congress would not be able to say, well, they're not holding to their deal, so now let's go back and make us better. It's impractical.
Yes,
and
I agree.
China has a history of doing exactly what you described.
Yes.
They agree to things, they sign documents, and then they just ignore them. And unless you, like you say, unless you have a responsive way of penalizing them for that behavior, then it's not going to work. It's all talk, but underneath the show. Now, speaking about tariffs, I've got one thing I don't like about what Trump has recommended about tariffs. And again, like I said, I'm a conservative, and I like to express what I think are true conservative values. I'm very unhappy about this $2,000 per person that President Trump is indicated he wants to implement. In other words, he would take the money, some of the money from the tariffs, the profit we have from the tariffs, and he would give it to the people, some of the people. Now, here's my problem with it. Number one is the people who get it are only going to be the, quote, low-income people. That's the first thing. Whoever those people, which is, again, a socialist way of doing things.
Also, they're the people that don't pay the taxes.
That's exactly my point.
Scott Bessent has already walked it back.
Yeah, well, he may walk it back. What I'm saying is that that idea that you only give it to certain limited people is a socialist idea. The second thing, though, is that it's going to cost, they estimate now, it'll cost up to $400 billion of the money we're getting from the tariff. That should go to paying down the deficit in the budget for this year. I think it's estimated it's like $1.2 trillion we're going to be in the red just this coming year. They ought to take that and apply it. We ought to be focused on the national debt, not giving money that the people... I'm not saying they don't need it, but the national budget is in a crisis state. We've got to address that. And the other thing is I heard that they were talking today about the potential impact on inflation. Because if you take the economy's doing reasonably well now, right? And the inflation rate is within acceptable levels. You add $400 billion to people that they can spend on anything they want, what's going to happen? There's going to be more spending, fewer things available, inflation is going to go up. So just when we're controlling it, we're going to take the risk of injecting $400 billion into the economy, which it doesn't need.
And unfortunately, or fortunately, with the big, beautiful bill, there is going to be a little bit of a windfall for people during their tax events in April, where stuff that happened this year will show up in their bank accounts next year, and they can adjust their W-2 withholdings so they get monthly increases. So there's already going to be an infusion of money above our current standard that will put some more
pressure. So you agree
pressure.
We don't need more?
Yes.
We don't need a big injection.
I'm just saying there's already going to be benefits to that very group. Yeah. I hate it. So when I say it's no tax on some of the tips, it's no tax on some of the Social Security, it's no tax on overtime, it's some of the overtime, it's those systems which will be towards the lower income people mostly. And so it's already going to have some cash coming.
Yeah. And what troubles me about it is that it implies it's like a politician thinking. Instead of President Trump thinking in the long term what's best for the country, he's now thinking like a politician. How can I correct from his standpoint? How can I correct this image that I have hurt the consumer? The consumer's not getting enough out of the economy. I haven't lowered the price. I haven't done all these positive things for the consumer. When in reality, that's a short-term approach that politicians look at. The long-term benefit for the country is ignored when you do that.
Now, I have a slightly different take on this. Not necessarily whether or not I want them to do it, but just a slightly, an angle we haven't looked at. If this money is not given to the taxpayers, first of all, if they give it to the low-income people, how much taxes did those people pay?
None.
I would be willing to see some part of it be given back to the people who paid the taxes. But aside from that, the problem with Congress is that if they think they have more money, they're going to spend more money. If they don't think they have more money, they're going to spend more money. And my concern is that if we don't give it back to the taxpayers, is it actually going to be used to pay down the debt?
Well, that's the bargain, and that's what they're saying. I'm going to do this instead of paying out, not the debt. I'm going to reduce the deficit.
We aren't even talking about debt reduction
for who knows when.
Right.
It's about the gain on the debt is going to slow down.
This is just balancing.
Golly.
This is a little bit of balancing of the income to the expected outlay.
But do we really believe they'll do that?
Well, I mean, if they don't start soon,
and
I do believe that with Bessent and these other folks in there, there's some really strong finance folks. I do believe they're going to bend a curve on that. They've got to.
Well, we're spending more on interest on the debt than we are in defense at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that's because of interest rates being up. Hopefully we'll get the interest rates down, so that'll happen. But that shouldn't take the pressure off of us
to get the debt down.
Yeah.
Very good. Mary, take us in a different direction now.
Well, this week, there was an article posted at Todd Starnes about the Anchorage, Alaska School District. And in their library, and it's actually a website called Must Read Alaska, and they have a picture of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. On that picture of these things that are recommended reading, they have a disclaimer that says, "The Anchorage School District does not endorse these materials or the viewpoint expressed in them."
What are the documents?
Our founding documents.
Our founding documents? And these are the documents that every member of that school board swore allegiance to when they took their office.
Yes.
So what's their comment on this?
The school district has yet to weigh in on the controversy.
Chicken.
Well, they have weighed in on it. They allowed it to happen. Their inaction is weighing in. Yeah. And they probably don't make much money like ours don't here either, but we should take their $1,500 a month away from them until they straighten up.
All right, Glenn speaks finally.
All right. Okay, folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? People in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back, folks. And again, thank you for joining us. We also have a lawnmower joining us. And I just wanted to tell you. Okay. Alan, you wanted to take us in a different direction.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up the crime issue for a minute because that's obviously important to people. There was a situation that's happening in New York State, particularly in New York City, but New York State generally, and California and some other states, where they have gone in and they've altered the laws so that juveniles who used to be able to be tried as adults, if they were like above age 16, they could be tried as adults, depending on the type of crime. And they've made that more difficult. In other words, so what I'm saying is that the people who are younger, the 16 to 18-year-olds now, who used to be, they could be tried as adults. The law in New York State, which was signed by Cuomo, said that you could not be tried as an adult until you were 18. So if you were 16, 17, you'd be tried as a juvenile. And the advantage of that is that the penalties and the handling of those people is much more lenient. And what's happening is some of the gangs, the existing gangs in New York, California, some of these other states, they are soliciting these younger kids to actually commit the crimes. They go out and they break into stores and they use them because if they get caught, then the penalty is minimal. They're released right away and so on and so forth. So so that's happening. And as a result of that, there's been a sharp increase in juvenile arrests for major felonies. And in New York, it's been an 80% increase in the shooting incidents involving youth. So we see how the gangs are taking advantage of these lenient laws. And the way I look at it, if you're 16, you know right from wrong. If you commit a felony, you should get the same penalty as somebody else does. So that's the way I look at it.
In relationship to that, Trump has sent National Guard in to work with the police in a number of cities to try to help with the crime rates. One of those places is Memphis. And there was an article this week at the Gateway Pundit that the Memphis Safe Task Force, working under the coordination of the U.S. Marshals, has rescued 101 missing children and cleared more than 1,000 outstanding warrants in 40 days. And the marshals arrested 2,300 plus individuals across Memphis on charges ranging from homicide to narcotics trafficking, firearms violations, and sex offenses. Of the cleared warrants, 203 were about firearms and 264 were narcotics related. But the figure that got me was the 101 children. I mean, I can't imagine what a parent would go through with a missing child. And these are 101 kids that have been returned.
Well, you have to ask yourself, what about all the illegals that sent their children alone to the border?
Yeah.
With a coyote.
Oh.
Those are the children that are, once they got here, we don't know where they went.
Yeah, and there are thousands of them.
So your plea that I can't imagine how a parent would feel, well, you put your kid in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And
what does the kid pick up as an occupation? As silly as that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And it's not really an occupation. They're a slave.
Well, yeah.
They're a slave.
Yeah, and I'm just pointing out that, you know, these illegal parents that have done this to their own children, to listen to the Democrats talk, all illegals are saints.
And then you get, recently, a couple of months ago, when Newsom went into, the California government went into a legal marijuana farm, they found immigrant children underage working as slaves.
Right.
So that's what happens to them.
That's surprising. One other thing about the crime thing, and then we can go to another topic if we need to, and that has to do with, there's an incident out in Orange County, California, and it involved what we were talking about in one of our previous shows about the relationship between mental illness and serious crime. And what happened was, apparently 4 or 5 years ago, there was a person who took a hatchet, went up to somebody that was in their car, broke the window, and started hitting them with the hatchet, okay? They killed this person, dragged him out on the ground, killed him, hacked him to pieces, okay? Pretty terrible thing. The person was charged with first-degree murder. However, because the person had a mental illness, this perpetrator was found to be incompetent to proceed to trial, okay? And he's been held in a facility, a forensic insane asylum, let's say it's in California. But now he's scheduled to be released. And he's going to be released because they're running out of bed space. That's their reason. And it was like, he's not the only one. It was like 12 or 15 other people that are in that facility that they're just releasing. Because the California law says that if you're convicted of a crime, or pardon me, you're charged with a crime, and your competency to stand trial cannot be guaranteed or cannot be assured within 2 years, then you have to be released. That's one thing. And the second thing is, this says if they don't have enough space in these facilities, then they can release it back in the community. Now, here's someone who committed a totally unprovoked crime, didn't know the victim, and to me, as a person who worked with the prison department, that would be the last person I'd ever recommend for release under any circumstance, because it's totally unpredictable. And so this is the kind of thing that we're going on, where there's a leniency, there's mental health issues, getting confused about there's a difference between mental illness and risk to the public. And to me, the risk to the public is the issue that should decide the case, not whether the person has a mental illness or not.
Okay, where do we want to go?
Let's talk about Jasmine Crockett for a minute.
Jasmine Crockett.
I noticed yesterday that some white woman who has a podcast got down on her knees and kissed Jasmine Crockett's feet.
Ouch.
And Miss Jazzy Crockett enjoyed every minute of it. Self-hating white people, I just...
Well, keeping that Jasmine Crockett hat on for a minute. So now she is now out of the Texas state legislature.
Who?
Jasmine
Crockett.
Oh,
she got redistricted out.
Yeah. She got redistricted out, okay.
Right.
And someone has done the research on Jasmine Crockett's financial reporting in the state of Texas versus her financial reporting for the same period of time in the U.S. Legislature. Okay, the financial reporting, somebody schizophrenic, is that the right word, when they've got multiple personalities?
Yeah.
They have multiple financial reports also. So
well, that's called a con.
That's the con, yes. So she has.
Yeah. That's a grift.
So is there any formal action being pursued on that disconnect of accuracy?
I'm not sure. I'm sure that it's going to start, but I'm sure it's not going to.
Well, she may need to get some new shoes.
Get some new shoes.
She may need to wear her old shoes for a while, actually.
That's better put.
Hey, I have a real serious thing that I've got to report on, and this came from Mary's cousin out in California. Now he's been a help to us because he helps us watch Bigfoot. We were out visiting in California, and
we went to the Bigfoot Museum
and did a few other things. But this happens to be in Pennsylvania. According to the Bigfoot Field Research Organization, BFRO, a retired civil engineer and Air Force veteran filed a highly credible Bigfoot sighting with the organization. The witness claims that on October 4th, while driving along Interstate 80, Pennsylvania, he witnessed what appeared to be a dark figure with a human-like head and shoulders entering the interstate and standing over the car in front of him. Well, now, just to carry this on a little bit more, he said it took the human-like figure only 3 seconds to cross the highway, describing its movement as a glide, and claimed that it has easily stepped over the barricades. The BFRO notes that this kind of movement would be nearly impossible for a human or a bear to make without pulling themselves over the barrier. This is important because this is the East Coast. Bigfoot's come to the East Coast. I got to put this in context with all the other news items that we had.
Okay, let's move on.
He stood over a car that was traveling 70 miles an hour on an interstate.
That's right.
All right.
So maybe there are disconnects. He glided across the path.
Yeah. Air Force guy, glide path.
Yeah. Okay. Let's.
Did we do anything? Because we did it off air, but the 50-year mortgage that the president has sort of proposed.
Yeah.
What are the pluses and minuses of it?
I think I'm odd person out, but I think it's a good option. It'll come up with a little bit higher interest rate. You know, you're going to pay more over that period, but it could allow more people to get in to a mortgage. They're saying on an average $400,000 house, it'll be a $250 a month reduction. That may be what it takes for some people to get in. You can refinance. You don't have to stay in it, you know.
And if you get into the house, you have that thrill of being an owner.
And it generates economic activity because you buy a house, you buy furniture, they say housing is the driver to a lot of things. So I'm saying, why not?
Yeah, the thing is, it's a free market. Why shouldn't they have mortgages, whatever length that's suitable for your needs? And you can, as we discussed earlier, you can very easily, let's say you sign a mortgage for 50 years. If you want to reduce the length of that mortgage, just double up your principal payments when you're able to. I mean, I did that. I had a 30-year mortgage, paid it off in 12 and a half years. Just doubled up on the principal payments. So I agree with you. It's more flexibility, and for some people for which that would allow them to buy a house, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Now, is this the government putting more money into circulation? I don't think so.
I don't think it's a matter of money. It's a matter of how much the people can pay per month.
And people take pride in what they own. If you own a house, you're more likely to paint it.
I agree.
Well, I was gonna say the attitudes that would be changed by people that get those mortgages. Homeowners think differently than renters.
Yeah.
And the thing is, too, the thing I like about it, too, it's kind of offsets what the Democrats keep saying about the unaffordability for youth. I'm going to say something. When I was young, I couldn't afford anything. I see these youthful people, they just get out of college, they get a job, they're riding around these expensive cars. You know,
yeah.
What you can afford is a function of how frugal you are with your money. And I don't believe that things are totally unaffordable. And the other thing is, if you live in a place where the cost of living is very high, move somewhere else. Don't live in New York City. Move to someplace else.
And this should allow many, many more people to get a starter home.
Yeah,
and if you live in a neighborhood where people own their homes rather than rent them, generally the neighborhood looks a little different.
Okay, folks, have a great week.